So we're beginning to sub the shiur in the morning of Nevuchim. Having swept through, right, sort of just telling you that God doesn't have a body, nor do angels have a body. The question then becomes is, all right, well, you've told me now that God doesn't have a body. What is God, though? Right, now, and this is really the focus of what's going to be between 150... at least 159, even beyond a little bit. And even beyond what Rambam gets into the God's names. And I think this is sort of a funny question. If you ask the following question to your average Jew who proclaims belief in God, I think this is true when you're talking about modern Orthodox, Yeshivish, Haredi, Open Orthodox, Central Orthodox, Religious Zionist, am I missing something? Shardal, Dati Light, Chabad, Chabakuk,
Conservative,
Shai Leibovitz is his own category. And what do I say? You know, you ask, what is God? He asks you, what is God? What's God? And the answer is,
don't know, can't know.
What do you say?
Don't know, can't know.
Don't know, can't know. Okay, is that the answer?
Shouldn't ask him.
If we understand, then we're on the wrong path.
If we understand, then we're on the wrong path? What does that mean?
You can't begin to understand. Once you begin to understand Akadosh Baruch Hu, you begin to understand how much you can't understand Akadosh Baruch
Hu. Ah. Okay, but then, okay, so then you have to, so if that would be the answer, so I'm not so sure how common an answer that would be, right? Then the... I'm talking about a sociological question right now. I'm not saying the Ramchal is wrong, or right, whatever it might be, right? So then the obvious question would be, okay, explain to me why we cannot understand what God is.
Beyond our understanding.
Yeah, but you pray to this entity, right?
You give like a mush.
You have to have
like,
a sense.
You'd be like, you'd give like a mush. You'd be like, a computer to understand its builder. You give like a kid's mush. Like, so why watch understand its owner.
Okay, so...
or its maker.
Okay, so and you pray to this entity...
who created you. That
when you die,
it's above you.
What do you think? Who are you turning to? God. Who is... this entity which we don't know. Who's God? Yeah. Okay, now, I think when people... I think some of those answers will come about. I think that a number of people would answer, well, he's the omnipotent, omniscient, all-knowing, right, all-powerful entity that created the world and continues to run the world.
Which is really an explanation of it. It just means something like that.
So then the next question would be, what does that mean? He's all-knowing, all-powerful. What does he know? What does it mean, all-powerful? Right. In other words, he gets all sorts of questions. And I think after a while, your average Jew will sort of stop and say, you're annoying me. Right? And it's an interesting phenomenon. I was looking over these passages last week in the Mora. Let's think about this question. And at first I got like really like annoyed. Why am I thinking about this question? This is an annoying question. You're annoying yourself. And then I started thinking to myself, no, this is really important. Why don't more people talk about this? Right? And I was going back and forth between annoyed at everything. In other words, maybe just in a bad mood. No, I'm saying, but in seriousness, it's an interesting phenomenon that this most basic concept of what Judaism seems to believe, and you might say Judaism's greatest or earliest or whatever might be contribution to the world, right, of monotheism, when you ask someone what is God, they have a very hard time answering that question. Now, there might be good reasons for that, right, but it's, you know, I still think it's peculiar that it takes them a hard time to explain why they have a hard time explaining it. Okay. Yeah, what is this?
Nothing.
And I think that oftentimes because there's such a focus on so many other things that we're learning and studying and talking about that, like, the question gets missed often. And within, it's possibly within other movements that this idea of what is God and like, gets talked about a lot more because...
What are other movements?
I don't know, reform or reconstructionist, because there's a lot less focus, or
certain types of Christian groups, yeah.
Because there's a lot less focus on the other texts that we're studying and the other ideas that we're studying, that there's a lot more time to focus on.
That's definitely true. I mean, we are very, like, halacha-oriented or action-oriented, and this is an interesting element within Jewish thought, which is, says, when you define what is emunah, mm-hmm. right, which are all the questions we're dealing with throughout the year, so when you look in the Torah, so emunah means trust. It doesn't mean belief in, like, the dogmatic mm-hmm. sense. And there's no doubt that there's much more focus in the Torah and beyond on action, on halacha and whatnot. I think that's true. And that, I think that's what you're saying, is we're caught up in a lot of other things. That said, first of all, I'm not sure on a sociological level whether other movements deal with this more. First of all, I'm not sure in other movements you have to believe in God. I'm not saying as a diss. I'm saying as I'm not sure. Certainly an act of God, it's revelation and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Not clear to me, I don't know. And in Christian groups, I could see it more, but I'm not so sure either. Yeah. I think that people aren't thinking in terms of metaphysics, in terms of those types of claims.
I think sociological, when you enter the world of Kiruv, a lot of Kiruv groups spend a lot of time talking about this stuff because it's the foundational sort of pillar. It's what is going to get somebody to
find. I think they try to prove God's existence.
Depends what Kiruv group you're talking about.
The nature of God. I don't think it's a problem that's specific to Judaism. I remember in school asking our Christian teachers about the Holy Trinity and then being totally stumped, and like, my wife's in Hebrew and her Muslim friends don't know, you know, they don't know. I just think that the question of God is a highly intellectual category, and once you've given your answer of the omnipresent, all-powerful being, to delve into that is an extremely, like, narrow, you get into, like, a very narrow and complicated sort of subject which people don't like thinking about because it is so complicated and don't have a mental capacity. It's much more easy to think about other things than it is to think about God.
All that, I think, is true.
And you're right, you said it's the reason. It's just a reason for why we don't do it. It is an interesting phenomenon.
It's an interesting phenomenon. Now, of course, there are those who have different types of answers to this question, and therefore they might have an easier time answering it. Although I'm not so sure, but certainly, I mean, the Rambam's God is not the same God as the God of Kabbalah. Meaning, they have in mind, in other words, they think they're not talking about the same, in other words, there's this famous passage that was a manuscript which was found by Gershom Sholem, this is a great historian of Kabbalah, where he talks about how some of the early responses to when the Zohar gets disseminated and out there, and one of the early responses from the Spanish intellectual realm is, Christians are bad enough. They got three. They got the Esospheros. Turn God into 10. In other words, again, you can argue on that. I'm saying, but
that's why Kabbalah doesn't have an Esospheros with Kabbalahs. Because you might come to think that one of the Kabbalahs is actually God.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm not saying it's a fair definition. What I'm saying is that and this Kabbalists should have a very hard time with the Rambam's God, even though it's interesting that the Rambam was adopted by some Kabbalists later on, and now they claim he became a Kabbalist, and there's all sorts of interesting things going on there. So I'm just highlighting the fact that, you know, it strikes me that it's a very I still think it's a peculiar phenomenon. What is God? When you ask people that question, it's hard for people to answer. Why do we believe in God? People are interested in. But of course, you might say, and this would make sense, well, in order to say, right, why do I believe in God? How do I prove God's existence? You have to know what entity you are talking about. And I think we get stuck there. And it's a very interesting phenomenon because people say, he's the creator of the universe. They have all sorts of arguments why the world had to have been created, for example. Okay? That might be true, but you still have to answer the question, well, what is this entity? What do we know about it?
Is there, I mean, for example, you can, the example is that Einstein said a lot of people don't understand the theory of relativity, but they can all use the theory. So if you can kind of use, you know, God created the world, you know, God runs the world, you know, God told you how to live, do you really need to be able to truly understand that? You can plug in the equations and still everything works.
Oh, like, so this is precisely a perfect lead into what the Ram tells us in 150. Okay? Ram starts off in 150 and says as follows. Know thou who studiest this my treatise. In other words, I don't know why in the 60s they had to write it this way. But anyway, okay? You who study my book. So much easier. Anyway, that belief is not the notion that is uttered, but the notion that is represented in the soul when it has been averred of it. Okay? Now, he's getting into the following. Okay? The Rambam makes a distinction here. It seems to be pretty clear, okay, between belief and knowledge. Belief is the affirmation that what has been represented is outside the mind, just as we represent it in the mind. Okay? When you then understand why this is the case, then you have knowledge of it. Okay? So let me explain this way. I think he's trying to say here is, when a person says belief, what's belief? Belief basically says, I affirm certain postulates, which I believe to be true.
With proof or without proof?
No.
Not dependent on proof.
That's right, not dependent on proof at all. Meaning, I say the right things, I think this is true, even though I don't fully grasp what that is. Okay? I don't fully grasp what it is, but I affirm it to be true. This is a proposition which I believe. Okay? And then there's something called knowledge. Okay? And this is, seems to be something different, with knowledge being that not just that I can state a postulate, right, but I don't really attach any meaning to it, because I don't really know what it means. Right? But rather, I have a sense inside of me saying, I get it. Meaning, I think I can prove it. So I can cognitize, I can intellectually understand it. That's knowledge. Now, the Rambam starts in 150 as his intro to what we'll call his theory of negative theology, or negative attributes, which we'll get to, is basically saying, there are a lot of people out there that proclaim the unity of God, but have no idea what that really means. Which, by the way, leads to all sorts of problems for them, because they can come to all sorts of contradictions. And then there are people that actually know or understand what is the unity of God and why that has to be the case. Okay?
Does that mean that they understand the unity of God?
Meaning that they understand the concept of the unity of God, and therefore they say that there's achdut. There's one, right? They're basically, they understand the consequences of that concept.
You think they've come to like a logical conclusion of their belief? They thought about their belief and then they've managed to prove it themselves in a logical,
that's right,
scientific way, to say that if I were to ask you on an intellectual level, who is God, you'd be able to give me a cognitive answer.
No. Well, if you would ask you, what does it mean that God, the believers say God is one. If you wanted, that's a belief, right? And it's a possibility. Say, yes, I believe in the unity of God. If you say, I have knowledge about regarding the unity of God, it means you understand this principle and this concept. Okay? And the Rambam is now saying to you, in the coming chapters, I'm going to explain to you what it means for the unity of God. Okay? And this is his introduction here to what's known as his theory of negative attributes. He's not the only one by any means who has this, not only in Jewish circles, but in non-Jewish circles as well. This is a big issue in Islam and Christianity. It's very clear that the Rambam is well familiar with, now, Islam and Christianity, but also in Greek thought as well. This is a big issue. It's very clear the Rambam is very much aware of that discussion, of what's going on in that world. It's also clear that the Rambam influences later thinkers, Jewish and non-Jewish alike, who say to him, the same Maimonides said, this, and I disagree, whatever it might be, or I agree. Okay? And in many ways, the core influence here is from Neoplatonic thought, Plato's thought, from someone named Plotinus, okay, who gives us a real sense of saying that God is above, way above. Okay? And what I mean by that is very transcendent. Let's take a step back for a moment. If you look in the Torah, the Tanakh, does God seem transcendent? What I mean by that is that does God seem up in the heavens, like way, like out there?
No.
How would you describe God?
Eminent.
Besides the fact he has a...
Eminent.
Besides the fact he's got a body. Pshuto shamikra, right?
Breshit, you mean?
Huh? Not only Breshit, throughout the Tanakh.
Eminent. Yeah. He's scary.
He's involved. He has feelings. He talks. He intervenes. Right? And there's all sorts of a very, what you would call, engaged entity. Yeah, right? We also have the Yugim Midot, right, that talk about, right? What about our Tefillah?
Oh, like there's Tefillah, so is that God is
eminent.
What do you say? That's true, Melech
Elyon. Surely the whole concept of Tefillah, that God would listen to your prayer and answer and act on it, surely is God eminent.
We definitely pray to a being we perceive as being higher.
100%. The question is, in what sense? When you describe him as the father of the, right, the God of your forefathers, right? Who's Mechalk El Chaim Bechesem, Mechayim Etim, Rachamim Rabim, Somech Lofnim, right? All these things. It sounds like we're talking about someone who's engaged, active in the world. Right? He's holy, right? All sorts of things. Okay, and there's, we describe him.
Unless you're having a conversation.
What? Huh? Plus you're in, great, you're turning to someone. Okay? Now, this is a very very striking element, is that when you read the following chapters, and when you think about this as we go forward in the Rambam, one of the questions you're going to ask is, who is this God? And how do I relate to him? And what does this relate to how the Tanakh describes God? Okay? Think about that as we go on. Now, the Rambam 151 begins by describing what's known as attributes. Okay? And what he basically distinguishes in 151 is two different types of attributes. The attributes you can have are either essential or they're accidental. Okay? Those are two broad categories. Look at page 113, in the penis version here, you'll see that he basically says that there are things that are essential that are inherent, and there are things that are added to the essence. Okay? Now, what does he mean by essential? Okay? So, do you remember when the Rambam in 1:1 he describes what it means to be a human being? And what does the Rambam say is a definition of a human being? Seichel, right? That was what the Rambam says is a definition. That's what he describes is what is the Tzelem Elohim, right? That is what essentially makes a person human. Okay, remember that? Remember back 1:1, that was a very important passage here. Okay? And therefore, what it means, Nasa Adam B'Tzalmenu Kidmitenu, what does it mean? We're going to create human beings in their form as opposed to the matter. The form is what is the essence of their identity. It's what, when you create them, is what makes them a human being. And everything else that's attached to humans, like their flesh, feelings, all sorts of other things, are what? Are what? The matter, right? Accidental. I mean, it's not, doesn't define what it means to be a human being. What defines a person as a human being is the seichel. And by the way, that leads you to a very perplexing, morally bothersome problem with a very, very simple situation. If a person is severely mentally disabled, right, are they no longer said to be, even before that, let's say from birth. But you could ask that as well at some point. Do they no longer, are they not a human being?
Is that?
Are they no longer human being in your case, in the coma case, right?
Do you think they have seichel or they have das? They have knowledge of their surrounding.
Huh? It's not a halachic law that defines a person.
No, 100%. I'm saying, but in its Hagdara, it raises the possibility, which was clearly manifested in Aristotle, who basically said these people aren't human. So Aristotle's answer to what do you do with a baby who's deformed, has no mental facilities, is basically
leave it in the field.
Right? Leave it in the field. Right? It's not a human being.
Well, I always look at it as from the other side, how the Maharal, he doesn't, instead of translating humans, he translates all other beings. He says they're called behema because lashon bama, like it is what it does, and that's it. Like it has no chira, so to speak.
Yeah, but he doesn't define. I mean, bechira is important here, but it's not the basis. Not bechira, right? The basis. I mean, it's related, of course. Bechira. The basis is seichel. Okay. In any case, I'm not saying this to the Rambam says that you leave children in the thing, but you'll see as we go along, there are lines where the Rambam makes very clear he has a lesser view of human beings who have lesser intelligences, such as
women, children.
Women. Right, children, so in the form, whatever it might be. Okay? This is what it is, I'm saying, but that's part of it. Now, you can respond to that, by the way. I mean, you could say that that's a misunderstanding, of, let's say, by Aristotle, because the form is still there, just there's some form of accidental material, right, in the matter, which is preventing the form from being manifested. Right? That's probably what Aristotle should have said, but he didn't, so. In any case, okay. Now, What made it the essential attribute is when they were created, this is what made, right, when human beings are created, what defined them as a human being, well, this creature is, oh, they have seichel. Okay. So the Rambam is now going to say, let's talk about God's oneness. Okay? Let's talk about what it means for God to be one. By getting into his attributes, or alleged attributes.
Okay? He doesn't hold the spheres at all?
No. Yes. Okay. Now. Very funny. Anyway, now. Okay. Now, by the way, it's important to note that one of the reasons Rambam stressed here, 151 elsewhere, is basically saying, listen, people got this all messed up. Which is why they say all sorts of crazy things, and they think they believe in God's oneness, but they don't. Okay? Now, when it comes to your essence, so the Rambam says as follows. I'm in 152 now. This one is basically a tautology, right? In other words, what I mean by that is it's hainuhach. Okay? So, human beings, what's a human being? A rational being. How do we know that? Because when they were created, that's what made them into, right, a human being. Now the Rambam says you cannot say that. Anything about God's essence. Why?
Is an accident belonging to the essence. An attribute is an accident belonging to the essence.
Before you get to that, we're not there, in the accents yet. Because it says if they weren't, this type of attribute must be denied. Because there are no causes anterior to him, before him, that are the cause of his existence and by which, in consequence, he is defined. Okay? In other words, here's the following. If nothing created God, right, and therefore there's no moment in which, oh, boom, this entity now existed, then how could you say this is a defining entity when there's never a moment of creation? In order to have an entity, or as an element, an aspect, an essence, which defines who you are, you have to have been, at some point, created. Human beings were created. Right? Angels, by the way, this is interesting, the Rambam and Chazal have this, right? Were created, okay, what angels are. But the point is that there's something that can define their essence in this regard. Not so for God.
That's why they have the, in Masechta Megillah, the reinterpretation. And like the Zginim are brought by Yavan to translate the Torah, they change around translation so it's not misinterpreted. right? That God was created.
Correct. But that's right. I'm saying, but the point, you know, so before we get to that, I'm saying the point which we're making is saying that in order to have an essence to define what you have to be a created entity. Point to the Rambam. The Rambam says, since it wasn't created, that there's nothing about God that can define him, since there's never a point when we said, oh, here's God. Let me give you an example. How do you define a car?
Make and model.
Okay, so you see a car on an assembly line. At some point, enough of it has been created when you say, oh, it has a car. We can argue about when that point is. But that's what defines it. Okay? Whereas at a point of creation has enough of this quality which you say, that's a car. But that can't have happened historically with God because it's interior to everything. Right. Now, he then says something else, 1 second, which is another element to essence, says as follows. When you say that something, let's take the car example again. When you say that something is a car, what are you saying? If I have, you know, like in a taxi cab, I have those little like beads hanging from the rear view mirror. Is that part of the essence of a car, or its attribute, or its accidental attributes?
Accidental
attributes. What does that mean? I had something on the car, and I added to it. Okay? And therefore, you're basically saying, I know what the core is, I know what, right? And I can divide those things up. Now, the Rambam believes you cannot say anything like that about God. Because the moment in which you say, ah, God has an essence, what are you then also saying? There's an essence separated from something else. But once it's separated from something else, that means there's division. If there's division, there's multiplicity. If there's multiplicity, there's no unity. Okay? So this is the Rambam's argument why God cannot have essential attributes. Now, by the way, not all the Rishonim agree to this. And Rav Saadia Gaon, who also has a similar theory, but he says, listen, we can talk about God's existence in the sense that he exists, that he's omniscient, all-knowing, and he's omnipotent, all-powerful. Once you start saying he has knowledge, you're basically saying there's a he and there's knowledge. Those two are separate from each other. And he says, no, that's not true. That's just a problem of the limits of linguistics. It's not real. It's just a language barrier. So
the Rambam doesn't sort of. He doesn't think that. He thinks that the human being is fully has the fully equipped mind to describe or define God in our terms.
That's definitely true. Although, as we're going to see, he also thinks that by its nature, God cannot be described. This is part of this.
Because it can't be described, or not because we don't have the tools to do it.
Both.
Happen.
Okay. So then the Rambam gets into all sorts of what he calls the accidental attributes. Okay? And this is here in 552. Have you guys seen this yet? 552? Okay, so briefly we'll discuss this, and then we'll pick up a little bit, because I'll give you a heads up on it. Now, there are basically three different types of accidental attributes. Okay? There's one which... says something like, there are different types within here, okay? He says there are different genres here. 1 second, I'll get a good line here. Equality, for example, equality, not equality, equality, okay? So, for example, you can say the person has certain moral habits, or you can say that they are soft or hard or strong or weak, right? Or they're timid or they're merciful, right? All of these things you cannot say about God. Why not? Now, when you consider all these attributes of what is akin to them, you will find that it's impossible to describe them to God, meaning very descriptive attributes. Why? 1 second. For he does not possess quantity, so there might be pertaining to him a quality pertaining to quantity as such. Nor does he receive impressions and affections, so there might be pertaining to him a quality belonging to the affections. In other words, to have all of those attributes, right, whether it means to be soft or hard or difficult or merciful or whatever it might be, implies that you have a quality that's describing quantity, some sort of substance. Or alternatively, that you have such types of animations, of feelings. And the Rambam says this is a problematic thing to say about God. Okay? Now, you may be looking at me and saying, wait a minute.
God is the one who described himself as having
what happens to all those attributes? Okay, we're going to get to that issue. The Rambam knows those psukim.
I'll
say at least. Not does he know them, but he makes a big deal about them. The Yugim Mamidu Rachamim. Okay, in other words, he thinks this is very important. That's probably the central of what Immutati Yodei is, of emulating God. I'm sorry? That isn't going to have to anthropomorphism. And, you get the questions here, okay? This is, he knows this. This is going to come in the following chapters. And then he says, well, you have a different type of thing, which is what you might call the relational attributes. Okay? Which is basically saying as follows. This is predicated of a thing as a relation for existence. If it's related to time, which are place, or to another individual. So you say that your predicate of Zai, that he's the father of a certain individual, or the partner, etc., right? Now, the Rambam admits in such a case that saying something like this, right, of properties, and such a property, does not necessarily imply multiplicity. In other words, to say, well, an entity has a relation to something, right, doesn't imply that the entity has some form of multiplicity. However, when one knows true reality and chooses where exact speculation, the fact that this is impossible becomes clear. There is no relation between God, may be exalted, and time and place. For time is an accident attached to motion, when the notion of priority and posteriority is considered the latter, etc. One second, I'm getting a good line here. It says, for it is impossible to represent oneself that a relation subsists between the intellect and color, although, according to our school, both of them are comprised by the same existence. How then can a relation be represented between him and what is other than he, when there is no notion comprising any respect both of the two, inasmuch as existence in our opinion referred by him may be exalted? Okay? Here's the point. For relation is always found between two things falling under the same species, where there's no relation between the two things if they merely fall on the same genus. On this account, how then could there subsist a relation between him and any of the things created by him, given the immense difference between them with regard to the true reality of existence, than which there is no greater difference? Okay, now here's what the Rambam, I think, is really getting to, which is as follows. Relation is an attribute with regard to which it is more appropriate than with regard to the others than indulgence should be exercised predicated of God. For it does not entail the posing of a multiplicity of internal things, right? But I can tolerate people saying this, but this is wrong. And I think this is the following reason. When you compare God and say he has a relation, or in relation, or relative to something, what are you basically saying?
They're all points. They're part of the same collective group, but there's...
That's right. There's point of comparison. And what the Rambam wants to argue is to say as follows. And Judah Levi, for example, disagree with him on this. But the Rambam wants to basically say is that God is so transcendent and so different, not just in degree, but in kind. Right, in type, that any form of statement which makes comparison of a relate or makes a relation between God and some entity has to be false because they're just not comparable. It's just operating in such vastly, vastly different planes that you cannot say anything about God relative vis-a-vis a place or a time or individuals. Okay, now, once you make such a statement like this, for example, can you say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh?
That's not describing in relation to anyone. That's just...
Well, you're saying that he's holy relative... Ah, okay. So the question is how you define it. Right, but in other words, you have all sorts of statements relating to what God is vis-a-vis the rest of the world in comparison. Right, all sorts of things like this. About his existence, which he thinks is very difficult to say. And therefore, what the Rambam's going to tell us now is primarily that which we can say about God, as we're going to see in the following chapters, is not what God is, but rather what he's not. In other words, I can say about God, God has no lack of knowledge. Okay, this is one of the things he really highlights in 156. Right? And the reason why I can say this is because I'm not telling you what God is, I'm just telling you what God is not. Ah, saying God has no lack of knowledge sure sounds like you're just trying to say God is
all-knowing.
No, 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 says the Rambam. That is not true. You think that's true, but you're wrong. And the reason why you're wrong is because when you say that God is all-knowing, you are putting God into the category of entities that are have knowledge. Okay? The Rambam feels that that's problematic. You cannot make such a comparison. Okay? Now, the Ralbag, your Sanity is right, disagreed. Seems Kreska at some points. It changed his mind over time as well. But the Rabbag disagreed and said, no, you can talk about God in a positive way because it's just this is just semantics, the negative versus positive. And what when we say in a positive light, we mean that God is the cause or is the source, let's say, of all knowledge or of all power, whatever it might be. Rabbag had this problem. The Rambam does. And therefore the Rambam says, he cannot talk about God in his essence, nor can you talk about God in his attributes, like as in midot, nor can you even talk about God relative to time, space, or to people. All you can say about God is two things. One is what God is not. And then the Rambam allows the following. You can also say, what is God? What are God's actions? Okay, this is the end of 152. The fifth group of the affirmative attributes is as follows. A thing has its action predicated on it. When you say this, you do not signify by the words. For example, let's say you have a carpenter. So you say the carpenter created this door. Okay, now you're not saying anything about the definition of the carpenter. What are you saying? This door is made by the carpenter. Okay. This kind of attribute is remote from the essence of the thing of which it is predicated. For this reason, it is permitted that this kind should be predicated God. But as long as you make clear, right, that the essence of the agent who's doing this act is very different.
So you could say God was merciful, God was angry, and God was...
You can say that God did X, Y, and Z. But if you say God did X, Y... There's the consequence... Yeah. Consequence of God's actions is X, that's okay. But if you say that the consequences of God's mercy is that these people are spared, therefore God is merciful,
can't say that.
Because once you say that God is, because what you're doing, you're basically saying very little about God. You're saying this is the consequence of his act. You're not saying anything about God. Once you say something about God, then you can't do that. All right, in the following chapters, we're going to see how he deals with, wait a minute. How do you deal with the Yugim Umidot? How do you deal with the Shemot of Hashem? Okay, and he gives us sort of an analogy and whatnot. We'll pick up with this. It's important. This is it's important for you guys to see these chapters ahead of time, so that's very hard to understand. Okay, try to get to the end of 159. Okay, but the thing, or one of the things I want you to think about here, is basically, who is this God, and does anyone want to worship such a God? And once you define God, A, that's sort of an existential question. B, once you define God, going back to metaphysics, in this manner, how does this type of God create the world, intervene with the world, providence, how do we pray to Him, right? Well, why does that make sense? I'm not talking about existential level, I'm talking about a physical, metaphysical level. Okay, and then you can start getting some uncomfortable questions, which relates to some of the great controversies in interpreting the Rambam. What exactly does the Rambam believe about God? Okay, we're going to show next time.